Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete. This is Darius. And last night, our Lakers had their third pretty bad loss in the last week. We had Milwaukee, Sacramento, and then last night to the Hornets, got blown out in LA. D, it was a game that Lakers started out well early in that first quarter. Luka was brilliant. I think they scored 39 points in that first quarter. LeBron went out late. There was a strange stretch between like the 6:30 mark and around the 3:30 mark or 4 minute mark where there were no timeouts or dead balls at all. And so LeBron ran a long shift there, which meant that Luka went all the way through the end of the first quarter. But things really flipped in that second quarter. Lakers really struggled to score against their switching defense, only scored, I think, 4 points or so with Luka off of the floor to start that quarter. And Charlotte took a 9-point lead, flipping what had been an early 13-point lead by the Lakers going into halftime. Charlotte starts out well to start that third quarter. Lakers make a push a little bit later. And then in the fourth quarter, after a timeout, Lakers had cut it to 6, I believe. Charlotte really took control of that game. And D, there are several things that stood out to me about that game. The Lakers' defense was completely helpless and tried very little different options to be able to find solutions. Gabe drew some boo birds. We'll talk about that in a bit. Kobe Bufkin made his debut with the big club. Where would you like to start?
I think I'll linger for a moment on just the context of how the team is playing and the sort of false start of the Hawks game, looking like the team had found something or turned something around. Felt like the Lakers had said to themselves, there's no way we're losing this game. We've lost three in a row, and we're going to be super deliberate about our approach, and we're going to play fast, and we're going to play hard, and that's going to be that. I think in the lead up to this Charlotte game, JJ, I think, got asked about what mattered in the Hawks game, and he talked about the team played hard. This to me is something that I find both true, but also it can't just be that you're going to go out and play harder. Mm-hmm. It's not enough in the NBA, particularly when I don't think the natural inclination of your best players or even your role players is to be like high motor, hard playing guys. That's just not the essence of who they are. LeBron might have been like that at one point during his career, but he's 41 now. And he's certainly had stretches during the last month and a half or so where he's like kept up a certain level. And I actually think LeBron's played really well over the last couple of weeks. So I don't even want to pinpoint him. I'm just saying, if one of your best players is 41 and your actual best player is Luka, who for all the things that he is, he's not a athletically dominant, impose my will from a physicality and motor aspect to him. He's this wonderful combination of power and skill, a jumbo initiator. He's awesome. And he was awesome to start the game. But you can't just be like, we're going to play harder than everyone else, particularly, Pete, when you are deficient athletically. And that was the thing that stood out to me in the Hornets game. There really wasn't anywhere for any of the Lakers players to hide defensively. And it was like a round robin for Luka. He started a fair amount of possessions guarding Brandon Miller. He was on LaMelo Ball for a little bit. He didn't really get many chances on Con Knipple because Con Knipple plays like Steph Curry to a certain degree. He was just running around in circles, going from one side of the court to another, using screen after screen after screen. And he's not going to guard Miles Bridges, and then he's not going to guard the other team's center. So to me, this was one of those games where I get that the Hornets have a bad record. And they've been playing better lately, but they're just not overall a very good basketball team. But it was again, oh, here's a young athletic team that's really good on offense and has a certain amount of switchability defensively. And after that initial run where Luka was awesome, they just gave the Lakers fits by attacking them on one end of the floor against the Lakers defense, sprinting up court after made baskets and just really trying to get into their offense quickly. And then on the other side of the court, they bet if we put two on the ball, it's going to do this or that. And they just said, we're just going to switch everything. And we don't think you can beat us when we switch everything. And the Lakers couldn't. It was like almost a 6-minute stretch. They didn't make a single field goal. And the only points they scored, it was only two. And they got them at the foul line. For all the offensive talent that the Lakers have, they seem to run into these sorts of problems against athletic teams who can sort of battle them at multiple spots on the court for position and who go away from the idea of, well, we're just going to put two on the ball because that's going to put us in a disadvantage and into rotation. So this was as thorough a butt kicking as you could have seen from like the 9-minute mark on of the first quarter, like from about the 3-minute portion, that stretch after LeBron went out, I just feel like Charlotte controlled the game the rest of the game. And every time the Lakers made the push, they had an answer for them. They just looked like the better team for a significant portion of the game. And considering both teams' records, that's a really bad indicator of where the Lakers are right now.
Yeah, especially when it's put in context with several other games that were that have been like this. After the game, Redick commented on how his on-ball defenders seemed very cautious and on their heels. On their heels was something I was texting you during the game that the Lakers seem, and that's going to happen if you're guarding somebody who's faster than you. Like, think of this from one-on-one type of on-ball situations. It's like Marcus Smart is guarding LaMelo. LaMelo's faster than Marcus is. You've got Luka some on Miles Bridges or LeBron on Miles Bridges, right? Knipple running around. There was just a big athleticism differential and speed differential on the ball that had the Lakers very much like in a defensive posture. And this is something I've talked about a good amount recently, D, that one of my bigger disappointments with the defense this season that I had laid out prior to the season as being one of the markers I would set for whether or not I thought this was a well-coached season defensively is how many looks the Lakers have in that. The Lakers don't have a ton of defensive talent. And so one of the ways that you can navigate that, you can't turn a team into something that it isn't. But one of the ways that you can get the best out of that group is to give a multitude of different looks. And the Lakers pretty much stayed in the same defense the whole game, that game. They've got a couple of different looks, but not a lot that's really built out. You didn't see anything in the way of zone or just you know, higher pressure. There weren't two on the ball. And one of the biggest sins to me, for a coach D is when the other team looks extraordinarily comfortable and you just keep doing the same thing that you're doing and kind of admonishing your team to be like, oh, do what you're supposed to be doing better. Do it more effectively. Be crisper with it. That you have to have some degree of variety. You're going to be outmanned across the board. Like, there are ways to coach and play when you have these sorts of disadvantages. I agree with your point about the offense, about how it's curious with the Lakers' offensive talent that they have, that they have a lot of really cold stretches that they struggle to get out of. And that's another thing, too, is like, you're going to face sort of the ebb and flow throughout a game on both ends of the floor from the coaching perspective. But how often do you let the same thing happen over and over again on either side of the ball without tactical adjustments? It matters a lot. So let's take a break here, come back and keep it going.
Imagine you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home, and with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric. It's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
There was a possession where I thought the Lakers were in a zone. It was when they were in their small ball look.
They ran Rando at the five a little bit. Yeah, but it was very, very minimal in that game. There were no like extended stretches.
Even in those situations where they tried to change things up, they were very passive.
Yes.
In what they were doing. It was almost like, well, if I pressure you up high, I'm still going to get beat on the dribble. There was this zone look that the Lakers had, and I think it was this part of the game when Gabe and Bufkin were both in the game. It was either LeBron or Luka, but it was Rui and Vando that were in the game at the same time. And this was basically the Lakers small ball look because Jackson didn't play again. And both the guards were like inside the three-point arc at a certain point. And I'm just like, this ain't going to work at all against a team that wants to bomb threes. And it didn't. There was also a possession where the Lakers tried to put two on the ball. And the second defender was so late. I think it was Smart who was like well below things. And he sort of like loped his way up. And by the time that he was even started to like get close to LaMelo, their two on the ball breaker, basically, right? They flashed a guy right to the middle of the court.
The release valve. Yeah.
The release valve came. They hit him. And I think it was a kick out for another three. That might have come during the stretch of the game where it was just like, okay, well, they had gotten it down to like six or so. And they're just like, okay, well, now we're going to try something different and maybe keep this going. And then it was one of the string of threes that pushed the lead back up to like 13 or 16. And then the game was over. And the recurring theme to me was what JJ said, this idea that the Lakers looked a little scared to get beat off of the dribble. If you start to do the person behind you's job on defense, you've already lost.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of, well, I'm scared to get beat also is an admission that you don't quite believe that the help is going to be there behind
exactly
you because you can't be scared to get beat at the NBA level, Pete. You're going to get beat off of the dribble. Players are too good. You can shade and you can do this and you can do that. And unless you're one of the elite, elite, elite ball containment guys, you're going to get beat. And so you have to sort of choose a direction and this other stuff. But what you can't do is be like, well, I'm just going to sag off or go under screens against LaMelo Ball on a night when he's hitting everything, or against Con Knipple, who's like a really good three-point shooter, or even against Miles Bridges against the Lakers when he morphs into a version of, like, I don't know, Kevin Durant and Michael Jordan or something, because he's always busting the Lakers' asses every single time we play them. But Marcus Smart, this was during the string of when LaMelo was hitting threes. They were running these guard-to-guard screen actions, and Jake was sort of at the level, and Marcus started to duck underneath the screen before it really came in order to switch. And LaMelo's just like, well, this is a 25-26 footer, but this is well within my range. He's been shooting those shots since Chino Hills, right? And he's just like, I'm walking right into this, and I feel great tonight. And he just buried it. And I'm just like, there's no one within 2 or 3 feet of LaMelo Ball on a night where after 3 points at the half, he couldn't miss.
Yeah, that was like the play you're talking about was like the fourth three he hit in the third quarter. And I'm like cussing at my TV. I'm like, is anyone paying attention? Like, you guys know this guy's hot and you're this far off of him?
And it was because Marcus was sort of like, well, I'm going under here. And Jake was sort of like preparing to maybe play against a drive as well and wasn't up at the level either. And it turned into basically like a step up three for a guy who's red hot. They miss Hayes. Of course, I think that's a real thing. In the non-Ayton minutes, there was literally like no rim protection at all. But even when Ayton was in the game, it's not like the Lakers were putting up this huge, fierce resistance at the basket. They certainly weren't rebounding all that well with or without Ayton in the game. And it was just another one of these contests, Pete, where I thought at some point when the game turned, the Lakers did fight and they did battle back, but they were never able to get over the top. And then it looked dispiriting to them. And then they also just... we're like, okay, well, I guess these guys are just going to make every three. That happening game after game after game has to be a bit demoralizing too.
Of course, it also can't just be a, oh, that's another team that had a hot shooting night, the way that Redick said afterward. Can't just be that every time. And so, yes, I saw a degree of demoralization from the team for sure. And they did not leverage their size to kind of overpower the team the way that they did against the Hawks. And to that end, I want to switch gears here, talk about Gabe and Bufkin and also team building, calling back to yesterday's pod as well. Gabe got some boo birds last night, went 0 for 7 from the field, was targeted mercilessly on the other end. That's something that stood out to me just as much as the missed shots is the degree to which he was actively hunted by the other team, by bigger athletes.
Got put into almost every screen action. The Hornets were not running big, little screens. They were running perimeter screens, guard-to-guard screens, and Gabe was being used a ton on this.
Yep, they were running where's Gabe screens. And that's sort of the premise of his job, right, is that he's this 3-and-D type of guard. Now, he shot fine from three in aggregate. He is a streaky shooter, which is not uncommon that, you know, his 36% or whatever he's shooting right now from three is, you know, the combination of some 3-for-5 nights and some 0-for-4 nights and some 2-for-3 nights, right? But it fluctuates quite a bit and couldn't hit anything. But it's really that is super important. And part of the reason why I think the Lakers have had such a severe fall off after Austin got hurt is because we don't have any guards, as I've mentioned before. And that our guard play right now, in terms of guys that are guards that are, you know, 6'0" to 6'4" or whatever, and guards on both ends of the floor, it consists of Gabe, Kobe Bufkin, Nick Smith Jr., and Bronny.
Do you count Smart here?
Yes, to an extent. So Smart is having to do a little more in the way of guard stuff that he otherwise wouldn't. But yeah, let's throw Marcus in there as well, right? But think about that on offensive end of the floor.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and even with Gabe's getting targeted on the other end too, that the guard play going from Austin Reeves to those guys being your main guards that are on the court, that's an awful, awful guard core, especially on the offensive end of the floor. And in the context of team building, and I was talking last pod about how one of the biggest aspects of this year is figuring out who should be here next year and who shouldn't. I've seen enough of Gabe personally that I don't need to, like, Bufkin came into that game. He battled on the boards. He had a couple of defensive possessions that I was like, oh, look at this. This kid's got some tools. And he's like, again, it's not something that I think, oh, he's going to, this is the guy or anything like that. But he has foundational tools on the defensive end that you can work with that, that one of the best opportunities the Lakers have from now through the end of the year, I believe, is finding guys in the G League, those fringe guys that the Jordan Goodwins that can, hey, maybe this guy can be on our team. Caruso was a find, I think, at the end of the 2018 season, maybe the 19 season, where the season was basically over. We weren't going to the playoffs, but we had cycled through some two-way guys and things like that, and we land on Caruso, and it's like, hey, this guy's actually a real NBA player. We have opportunities to do that between now and the end of the season. Like, for me, D, this is guard tryouts between now and the end of the year. And so Gabe getting booed, not really having a future with the squad, like, give Bufkin some minutes, give Nick Smith Jr. some minutes, but I want to see sort of that next group of guys way more than I want to see Gabe. Let's take a break here, come back, keep it going.
Imagine you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home, and with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Yeah, Gabe is in a very rough spot because he's never really rediscovered the version of his game that was the premise for the Lakers signing him in the first place. Gabe was a streaky player with Miami, but because he got so many opportunities, his production was good. And defensively, Gabe is in the right place almost all of the time. He's a well-positioned defensive player. Someone messaged me this on social channels, but they were like, I think the athleticism Gabe did have has gone down and suffered because of the leg injuries.
I can see that
he's dealt with. And that was something that I hadn't really thought about or considered at all. But Gabe's a small guard, and he needs every ounce of all the athleticism that he ever had in order to be the player that he can be on both sides of the ball.
Can I jump in real quick on that? That is essential to his type of defender. He's in the right spot, but he actually has to beat you to the spot and make you get uncomfortable with your feet to be really effective as an on-ball player. And if you lose a little bit of that, like a couple of the moves that Brandon Miller put on him in open space, like a little inside-out dribble where Gabe bit, he thought it was going to be a crossover, and he couldn't recover fast enough, whereas most guards, like if you're smaller than somebody, you know, 6 inches taller than you, you can actually take more steps than they can and beat them to that spot. But Gabe didn't have enough juice to be able to be like, ah, crap, I can get back in front of that.
And then on top of that, when he's facing like-sized players, a lot of the guys who he's going up against, if they're not pure speed demons, they are power guards in a small guard's body. So even Colin Sexton is a little bit like this, where it's just like, he will try to bull through you if he can. Isaiah Collier is a very similar player in this way. And Gabe is having trouble with those guys now as well. He's well positioned, but these guys are able to like meet his lower center of gravity with their own lower center of gravity and are knocking him back. And because he doesn't have like great leaping ability, his contests are good. If you look at the form of it and like how he's fully extended and,
he's really getting his hand back, right?
But he's not making anyone adjust their form or alter their shooting release.
They don't even feel him. Miller just rose up over the top of him. And
yeah, well, Miller's much bigger, but I'm even talking about a player like Sexton's size.
Sure, sure.
Right? And this came to a head for me, actually, a couple of seasons ago when the Lakers played Denver in the playoffs. And Jamal Murray's not a huge guard.
No.
He's enough bigger than Gabe where Gabe's really going to have to play great positional defense and be strong at his base in order to not get knocked off by Murray, who has some big guard like tactics to him, but isn't 6'5", 6'6", in that way. And Gabe had a ton of trouble with Murray when you would have thought, well, at least he can like stay in front and stick with him. But Murray was losing him a fair amount of time. And so when you say like, I've seen enough of Gabe, I have too, because he's sure 36.5% on threes, but his volume is super low because he's never going to get off enough shots. This last game, he went 0-for-7, so he did get up more looks than what he normally did. But Pete, he's shooting like 22% on two-pointers this season.
He's taken like 18 twos the entire year. He's like 4 of 18, right?
Yes. If all you're ever going to do is spot up and take a spot up three or come off of a screen and take a pull-up three, then that's really all you have to defend for. Gabe can't rack a closeout and get to the rim and finish at the rim. He doesn't have a floater game. He missed his only pull-up two this past game when he like basically pump fake, ripped through, got into the lane and shot a 16-footer and he missed it.
He actually missed two of them because the other one got blocked because he snaked his dribble into the lane, picked up his dribble and was like, oh crap, I'm stuck now, and faded away and got it blocked. So yeah, he doesn't contribute from the second level.
And he's not going to finish at the rim. I've said this before and it's an obvious thing, but he's not good enough on defense to be this level of offensive contributor.
Yes.
You've got to be at least at Vando's level. We talk about Vando's distortion. Teams do guard Gabe, so I get it. But they're guarding him to the point where he's missing because they're paying attention to him defensively.
He's also distorting in that he does absolutely nothing at the basket. And so the type of ways that you can stay home, like if Gabe racks a closeout for whatever reason, it's like, all right, come on in here and see what you can do. And you see most of the time, like he had a chance in this last game to finish at the rim and Miller and had him kind of sides up and he kicked it to the corner to Vando instead. Exactly.
Yeah, because Miller was providing back pressure and Gabe felt it. And that was the right play.
Yeah, but it would have gotten blocked, but because
on the telecast, they had said like Gabe might have had a chance there, but he felt the pressure and so he kicked it out. But we spent a lot of time talking about Gabe and I don't want to bury him as like, oh, it was Gabe Vincent's fault, right? It wasn't Gabe Vincent's fault, but his position in the rotation is emblematic of the challenges the team is facing right now in that he's one of their only rotation level guards right now.
And he ain't rotation level, man. None of our guards right now are rotation level.
He's playing below that level.
Yeah.
When JJ went back to him, the boo birds that came out when he was missing shots, I think were as much frustration about the misses as they were about him being in the game at the first place.
Yeah. Him coming back in, he had no business coming back into that game.
He hadn't done anything on defense and he had missed all of his shots. And the fact is maybe JJ felt he didn't have an alternative at that point. But it's tough sledding right now for the Lakers from a guard perspective. I'm interested to see what Bufkin can do. He's still very much in like pass the ball to anyone else mode.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to see him get some of that G League juice to him and be like, I can play, or at least try to act like he can play, because this is what he's in the league for to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, I want to focus on this specifically. I'm so glad you took it in this direction with him. This is something that I have a little bit of grace for in the debut with the big club type of thing, but this is something we've seen other guards sort of deferring to the Lakers on-ball talent that had some on-ball juice themselves, or at least scoring ability. Dinwiddie a couple of years ago, this is pre-Luka, right? But him coming to the team and barely being able to score at all, I think that it's similar in this respect, in that there is, we've had these guards, Kendrick Nunn was another, that had individual scoring ability of their own, but there was so much deference to the big dogs, right? It's like, I might have be able to do this, but I'm not Luka Doncic type of thing. And one of my favorite plays on offense from Bufkin in that last game was related to this, in that Luka had made an outlet pass to him up the left sideline. Luka was being harassed a little bit. And on a lot of plays similar to the one that they made there, that player will give it back to the point guard. And this is a way that I see the league overall changing. But Bufkin caught it and looked back to Luka, and I thought he was going to pass it back to the backcourt to Luka, but he actually looked up the court instead and had Rui up the sideline. Rui caught it, racked baseline, and Rui had a little drive-in dish. And we got a layup out of it. I forgot who he dumped it off to. It might have been Vando. But
it was.
Yeah.
It was Vando.
We got a layup out of that where it was like, that's what other teams do to us. But that aggression, Kobe Bufkin is the leading scorer in the G League right now. He didn't even take a shot in his first shift, which lasted a good 9 minutes. That is essential to him being able to stick and possibly be one of those, hey, maybe Kobe Bufkin could be our 12th man on next year's roster type thing, on a vet min type of contract. It's like, do what you do. And that's one thing, more broadly speaking, that are those satellite players, those guys who are not Luka, LeBron, Austin, not playing on the ball a ton, that have a little bit of their own juice. They have to be aggressive. That's something that I've actually liked about Marcus Smart the last couple of games on offense, is he's not just a three-point shooter, because he's going to freaking suck at that sometimes. Like, he's been using his physicality, getting in the paint, kind of hitting some of his by hook or crook floaters that are a little awkward, but it's like, don't just let yourself be a three-point shooter. Don't just be based off of whatever Luka, LeBron, and Austin do. Like, they, all those guys have to have a level of aggression of their own.
I think a player like Austin should serve as a great example for all of these guys, in that first 6 months of him as a player, you were decrying him like, come on, man, you got to shoot the ball. You got to shoot the ball. And so it's natural to have that deference when you see LeBron James over there, or Luka Doncic, or when we came up, Kobe Bryant. But when your best NBA skill is being able to like score some or create some, you got to try to bring that to the table, or you're really burying yourself here. Before we wrap up, Pete, one of the things that stood out to me in this game as well was the need for the Lakers to play these small ball lineups because Jackson didn't play. And this is something that I'm going to say again, because we brought it up the other day, but I think it bears repeating. Jackson Hayes has been a good player for the Lakers this year. And when he's been out, he's been noticeably missing. And I don't know what that says about DeAndre Ayton. This was a game where Ayton didn't close again, in a matchup where I thought the game turned when the Hornets decided they were going to start to switch more. And that should be feasting time for your big player to go get on the backboards, and Ayton really couldn't make an impact on the offensive glass. The Lakers sure as hell had enough opportunities on the offensive glass, Pete. They weren't making any shots, and Ayton really didn't make an impact there. I'm not soured on Ayton, but this is like the third or fourth game during this stretch of games when the Lakers have not played well that Ayton didn't close. The Lakers played a small ball unit to close the game, like during the important minutes of this is the comeback and this is like the group that we're going to play. It was the small ball group, and Ayton wasn't on the court. And this is just something I'm monitoring, Pete, and I'm asking you to monitor it as well about like where Ayton is, because he's been really good overall for the team this year. But as the team has hit their low point, Ayton has seemingly hit his low point as well. And correlation doesn't equal causation, but there is too much of a coincidence to me that this is happening while Hayes is also out as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's coincidence. I think DA is going to be a bellwether for the team in that he will follow how the team is performing. If the team has a degree of we're all jogging back on defense, or we're all not running the floor, of which that's part of my discomfort of singling him out on some level, is that he's in a lot of ways following along the culture of the team right now and playing. He does not stand out to me relative to the overall. What stands out to me is that relative to when he's really going, like the ATL game, he was central to that victory and how dominant the team was and being able to be more physical and leverage their strength and size against a team. Like, that's one of the things that one of the ways that you beat a team that has an athletic superiority is like, well, what is your advantage? What is the thing that you do better than them and do that better than them? Then they use their speed against you. And DA is just absolutely essential to that when he's that the team really hurts. But again, D, I just think that it's more he's going to follow. He's not going to be the guy that pulls us out of a malaise. He's going to go along with it. But yeah, if you want a guy who that doesn't fit that description, DA might not be that guy. Jackson is that type of guy, but he comes with other difficulties that we see rear its head. And so the Laker game of whack-a-mole continues this weekend. Got another back-to-back. We will be back on Monday to discuss. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires again. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, ready pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move, two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant, yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.